and welcome to the February 2022 edition of This Month in Water History, a CRW podcast. I'm your host, Beth McGinnis, and this episode, based on our introductory music, has something to do with the American presidency. Specifically, we're going to be talking about the early indoor plumbing and drinking water provided at the White House and the subsequent waterborne illnesses that impacted the occupants of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue during the 19th century. So how did this topic connect to the month of February, you ask? President's Day is February 21st. Both George Washington and Abraham Lincoln's had birthdays in February, and sadly, Lincoln's 11-year-old son, Willie, died of typhoid fever, a waterborne illness, in the month of February as well. In preparing for this episode, I came across an article from the Saturday Evening Post entitled Killer in the White House. Doesn't that sound like a horror movie? The article focused on typhoid and other waterborne illnesses that were suspected of killing three different presidents in the 19th century, as well as Lincoln's son, Willie. Before we dissect the details, let's start with some basics. Up until 1883, water was carried in buckets to the White House by servants and stored in two wells inside the breezeways. Piping for running water was first proposed in the Madison administration, but the War of 1812 with Great Britain got in the way of seeing that project through. They actually burned down the White House, actually, so the president had to wait until 1829 to have the beginnings of the project begun, and that culminated in 1883 during the Andrew Jackson administration with a gravity-fed water system that was sourced from a spring four blocks from the White House. This spring and waterworks moved water to the White House, the Treasury, the State Department, War, and Navy buildings. One theory is that the source water was contaminated during the American Civil War by the unfortunate hygiene practices of the U.S. Army, as the spring was in Franklin Square, a segment of Washington, D.C., where troops were quartered to protect the Capitol. Now, if you've ever been to Washington, D.C., you know that the Potomac River divides the district from the state of Maryland. During the early years of Washington, D.C., canals and aqueducts existed where streets now are and connected to the river flows of the Potomac River. The D.C. area was a marshy swampland, and bodies of water were the primary place where residents dumped their raw sewage. Between the growing population that was coming to the district in general and the size of the growing U.S. government during the time of the Civil War, it's no wonder that poor sanitation practices polluted the drinking water. However, no one knew at this time that this was something to be concerned about. Another key tidbit about our villain in this story is typhoid. It has been around since ancient times, and outbreaks of the bacillus-shaped bacteria have caused significant loss of life over the generations. Typhoid fever, as the disease is called, began to decline in the U.S. with the advent of four things. One, a recognition by the scientific community that typhoid was transmitted through water, not through bad airs, known as the miasma theory of disease. Two, a detection of the bacteria in human waste, and the crafting of a vaccine in 1838 by Dr. William Budd, an English physician. Three, improved environmental engineering that reduced the risk of contamination of drinking water sources by clearly separating wastewater from drinking water. Four, introduction of chlorination of drinking water supplies in the 1900s. On February 20th, 1862, William Wallace Lincoln, known as Willie, his father Abraham's favorite child lay dying in the White House residence from typhoid fever. His death caused a schism in the household of Abraham Lincoln. Willie's mother, Mary Todd Lincoln, blamed her husband's political ambitions for their son's death. If you've ever seen the movie Lincoln, you get a sense of just how unhinged Mary could be, and the loss of Willie just exacerbated her existing mental health challenges. When you think of the legacy of Lincoln as a leader, you might be thinking about his ability to coalesce a team of political rivals in his cabinet, or his ability to manage a slew of frustrating losses and unsuccessful generals until he met General Grant. or that he dealt with a wife that was politically and interpersonally polarizing. But the cherry on top of that is the fact that he was a dad who lost a beloved child. It really makes his legacy of keeping the Union together that much more mesmerizing. An article that I mentioned earlier about the killer in the White House, that shared suspicions that three presidents succumbed to typhoid or gastrointestinal illness in the 19th century. In 1844, President William Henry Harrison delivered the longest inaugural address at 2 hours. Not long after that, he died in office of what at that time was thought to be pneumonia, brought on due to the rainy and damp weather during his speech and his reluctance to wear a jacket. However, in 2014, researchers theorized that the diagnosis was incorrect and that the historical records show symptoms that are more like a gastrointestinal illness, likely brought on by contaminated water running to the White House. Could it have been typhoid? We don't know. Apparently, the symptoms experienced by Harrison were like President James K. Polk's symptoms when he died in 1849, rocked by diarrhea and dehydration. At the time, they attributed his death to cholera, another waterborne illness. However, the common element in both cases was the source water's contamination. Our third president to have a similar bout of gastrointestinal issues after was Zachary Taylor. He consumed iced milk and cherries at his inaugural banquet and liberally used the running water of the White House. And within an hour of eating and drinking, the symptoms began. He lasted 5 days before he died. Luckily, Congress eventually appropriated funds for a waterworks system with sand filtration around the time typhoid deaths were at a peak in the district. Until a plant could get built, residents boiled their water like we do now when the water pressure goes down in our water systems. The sand filtration plant they used was finished in 1905, and subsequently typhoid deaths decreased significantly as other water distribution and water quality systems were improved. So now, what does this mean for modern life? Well, there are two words to answer that question: disinfection and chlorination. In 2018, the EPA celebrated 100 years of water chlorination in the United States. This fundamental achievement in water quality has saved so many lives, and it is a hallmark achievement in the field of public health. As I mentioned earlier, chlorination was instrumental in the significant reductions of typhoid fever illnesses and deaths. Here at CRW, we also chlorinate our raw water from the Clackamas River. As the water enters our plant, we initially disinfect with chlorine, and once the sand filters and other processes have removed sediment and debris, our water enters contact basins, which are intended to allow more time for the water to mix with the chlorine to further disinfect the product. We also supplement our water supply in areas where pressure can decrease by adding more chlorine at strategic points in the system to ensure water safety and quality. To learn more about our water treatment process, head on over to our website, crwater.com. There you'll find our consumer confidence report from 2021, and it's available for download. We anticipate that our next report will be released for 2022 in June. And with that, that is your Month in Water History podcast. Thanks for listening. Have a great President's Day weekend, and we will see you next month. Thanks for listening.